2007, to consider the matter entitled Vernon Edward Jackson versus Asarco LLC, docket number West 2006-4116-416-DM. President or myself, Chairman Duffy, Commissioner Jordan, and Commissioner Young. We will start with an overview of the case presented by Sarah Stewart of the Office of General Counsel. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning. In this discrimination proceeding arising under Section 105C3 of the Mine Act, Vernon Edward Jackson filed a complaint stating in part that he had been hired as a heavy truck driver by Asarco. On February 18, 2006, he mailed to Asarco a safety-related suggestion about loading trucks. On February 22, 2006, he was asked to clean up a spill of copper concentrate, which he believed was hazardous, allegedly without proper equipment or training and without supervision. Jackson expressed safety concerns to management and was removed from the mine property on February 23rd. This case was assigned to Judge Bullock, and in August 2006, the parties filed pleadings and correspondence that revealed difficulties in communication. As relevant to this appeal, on August 10, 2006, Asarco sent a letter to the judge requesting a teleconference with Jackson and the judge because Jackson had missed a discovery deadline. On August 15th, the telephone conference took place. The judge allegedly advised Jackson to seek counsel. Jackson allegedly replied that he was having trouble finding an attorney because this was not a whistleblower action. And Jackson allegedly stated that Finch mistakenly believed that he was suing Asarco for discrimination rather than for a training violation of Section 30 CFR Section 48.7. On August 16th, Jackson faxed a letter to the judge noting his reservations about considering his action a claim alleging discrimination rather than an action for a training violation. On August 18th, 2 days later, Asarco filed a motion for summary decision seeking dismissal on the basis that Jackson did not intend to assert a claim under Section 105C. Rather, it contended Jackson intended to assert a claim for a training violation and there is no private right to action under Inch's rest. On August 21st, Jackson sent a letter to the judge explaining that he had no intention of withdrawing his 105C3 complaint. He also stated in essence that he was unable to afford an attorney. On that same day, Jackson also sent a letter to the judge setting forth a chronology of events that had occurred on February 22nd and 23rd, 23rd being the day that he was removed from mine property. Rather than ruling on the motion for summary decision, the judge issued an order staying the case. The judge issued the parties to complete discovery, engage in settlement negotiations, and report back on the status of the case by October 2nd, 2006. Shortly thereafter, on August 31st, 2006, Asarco sent a letter to the judge requesting assistance in obtaining responsive answers to discovery from Jackson. Asarco explained that it was sending this letter in lieu of making a motion to compel. On August 12th, Jackson sent a letter challenging that his discovery answers had been non-responsive on the basis that according to the meaning of responsive, he had in fact responded. The judge issued three orders, which ultimately resulted in the dismissal of Jackson's discrimination complaint. The dates of those are September 27th, November 2nd, and November 28th. The first, on September 27th, the judge issued an order requiring Jackson to obtain representation within 30 days of the order. The judge explained that Jackson's verbal and written communications had been confusing and sometimes incomprehensible, and that Jackson was either unwilling or unable to engage in meaningful discovery and settlement negotiations, and that as a result, Jackson could not receive the full and fair hearing that he was entitled to by law. The judge also noted that in a telephone conference of September 21st, that would be about 6 days before this order, he had informed Jackson that his failure to obtain representation might result in the dismissal of his discrimination complaint. On November 2nd, 2006, the judge issued a show cause order directing Jackson to provide the contact information for his representative within 14 days or to show the reason for his failure to do so. The judge stated that otherwise, Jackson's complaint would be dismissed. Finally, the third order on November 28, 2006, the judge issued the order dismissing Jackson's complaint The judge noted that the purpose of the show cause order had not been punitive, but had been to afford Jackson a fair hearing. And she noted that because Jackson had failed to coherently address the elements of his case and was non-responsive during discovery, ASARCO had been deprived of due process of law. Jackson filed a petition with the commission challenging the dismissal, which ASARCO opposed. The commission granted the petition and issued an order on January 17, 2007, directing the parties to address the following issues. Would you like me to... I can go ahead and read these very quickly, these issues.
Please.
Whether, under the circumstances of this case, the judge was authorized to require the complainant to obtain a representative or to risk having his discrimination complaint dismissed. The second issue is whether, under the circumstances of the case, the judge properly dismissed the discrimination complaint without prejudice because the complainant failed to respond to a show cause order directing the complainant to provide contact information regarding the representative. And third, whether the record supports the judge's determination that the complainant failed to coherently outline and address the elements of this case, thereby depriving ASARCO of its right to due process of law. Jackson did not file a brief addressing those issues. Rather, he filed a motion requesting that he be provided with transcriptions of the telephone conferences that had occurred between the judge and ASARCO and Jackson. On March 6, 2007, the commission issued an order denying Jackson's motion and stating that the commission does not transcribe or record telephone conferences. On March 7th, the next day, Jackson filed a motion requesting that the commission set aside its January 17th order and that the chief judge assign the case to another judge or preside over the matter himself. He maintained, in essence, that the failure to transcribe the telephone conversations was an oversight by the commission, and that without the transcriptions, Jackson would be unable to address those three issues that I just read for you that were set forth in the commission's briefing order. ASARCO filed a brief responding to those three issues, requesting that the commission affirm the judge's dismissal order. And essentially, ASARCO stated that Jackson had failed to coherently address the elements of his case and that the judge properly dismissed the case in order to preserve the due process of Jackson and ASARCO. Thus, the issue on review is whether the judge erred in requiring Jackson to obtain representation or to risk dismissal of his complaint. Also pending is Jackson's motion requesting that the commission set aside its January 17th order. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Any questions? Commissioner Young?
Thank you. Sarah, I appreciate your thorough exposition of the issue, which I believe is an important issue, i.e. whether a party should be required to proceed with an attorney before the commission. And if we were required to decide the case on that issue, I think that your analysis forms a solid framework around which to build a decision. However, I don't believe we're required to decide that issue because the only way I can construe the petitioner's plea on March 7th is as a motion to dismiss his PDR. On January 17th, we ordered the parties not to file any documents other than briefs or motions allowed under our procedural rules. The only motion that's allowed without conferring and making a record of that conference with the other party as to whether they consent or do not consent to the motion is a dispositive motion. Furthermore, in asking us to set aside the order governing the proceedings before us, I can't discern any other purpose for that motion except to dismiss the PDR before us. The other relief sought in that motion essentially seeks to have the case reassigned from Judge Bullock. However, that motion does not include the procedural requisites, including an affidavit to support it, nor does it include, in my opinion, any facts that would support reassignment of this case to a different ALJ. Again, the principle propelling our grant of review in this case in the first place is that parties shouldn't be barred from commission proceedings for want of representation. And I think that this commission has traditionally been patient and accommodating with pro se litigants who make a good faith effort to deal with the complex legal, regulatory, and procedural requirements of practice before us. But even when a litigant appears uninterested in striving to meet a minimum level of decorum and procedural competence, I believe it's important that we ensure the commission and our judges adhere to a higher standard, protecting the due process rights of all who come before us, as well as the integrity of the process itself. That issue, however, is no longer before us because the petitioner, in my view, has requested that we dismiss his case, and I would move to grant that and vote to grant that petition. Thank you.
Commissioner Jordan?
I would not agree with my colleague. I would not dismiss the PDR, and I'm not sure that Mr. Jackson's pleading should be construed in that regard. Jackson's brief was due on March 7th, and on that date, he submitted a pleading to the commission. He entitled it a motion rather than a brief. And in it, he basically asked for the dissolution of the commission's previous briefing order. But he appeared to explain why he was not able to address the issues in that order, and he asked for his case to be remanded to a different judge. And I would vacate the judge's decision because the judge dismissed this case on the grounds that Mr. Jackson had failed to comply with her order to obtain representation, and has been set out in the DM, which I also thank you, Sarah, for your thoughtful analysis in there. Neither the Mine Act or the APA or the Commission's regulations would require somebody to obtain a counsel to proceed before the commission. I can understand the judge's concern and frustration which led her to issue that order, but nevertheless, I believe that even although she expressed a concern that Mr. Jackson himself would not be able to proceed effectively and might be depriving himself of an adequate presentation of the issues before the commission, that is not a valid grounds to dismiss the case. Given that the judge's order to show cause was requiring Mr. Jackson to obtain something that's not required by the commission, i.e. to notify her of the information regarding his representative, Mr. Jackson's failure to respond to that order, I don't believe would be a grounds for upholding the judge's dismissal of the case either. Turning to the last issue of whether Mr. Jackson's pleadings are such and his representations are such that they are so confusing and incomprehensible as to deny SARCO the ability to defend itself or to deny the judge the ability to adjudicate this matter, I consider that matter, but I do believe that there is enough in the pleading submitted by Mr. Jackson to discern, at least at this stage, enough to comply with the, to make out of at least the elements of a case. Mr. Jackson does set forth some facts, particularly in one of his pleadings that denotes various events that occurred on specific dates, that he did make safety complaints regarding the conditions that he and some fellow workers were required to work in. He did make a safety suggestion to the operator. He was discharged, and the timing of the discharge was, of course, coincided very closely with his complaint. So in that regard, I think he has at least alleged enough to overcome a dismissal of his case. And I believe that this is that usually the commission, if a party has failed to file a brief, there's usually been some motion to dismiss by the other side or an order to show cause issued before the commission would dismiss a proceeding on that basis. So I would not believe that Mr. Jackson's filings, even if they don't amount to complying with the commission's briefing order, would warrant dismissal of the case.
Thank you, Commissioner. Let me begin by emphasizing that in the nearly 30-year history of the Commission, a common theme and intent has been the rigorous and consistent accommodation of pro se parties, be they small mine operators or individual miners. This solicitousness for the concerns of parties who often find Mine Act proceedings daunting or even intimidating has been especially evident among those who serve on the front lines. I'm referring to their Office of Administrative Law Judges. Such has certainly been the case in this proceeding. Yet, however much I agree with Judge Bullock that the complainant would have been well served by securing legal representation, Section 105(c)(3) of the Mine Act, Commission Procedural Rules 2700.3b1 and 2700.4a, and Section 555b of the Administrative Procedure Act, all clearly allow for pro se representation in this instance, no matter how proficient or deficient that representation may be. Turning to that representation, Mr. Jackson, on March 7, 2007, in lieu of filing a brief as directed by the Commission in its order of January 17, 2007, filed a motion that I construe to be a request that the Commission vacate its direction for review. I believe that we should accommodate him. I therefore vote to vacate the direction for review and return this case to its posture as of December 26, 2006, the day before his petition was filed. It is, in my view, incontestable that once a direction for review is vacated, no other relief can be sought or granted. Therefore, a remand at this juncture would be inappropriate. Anything else?
Just to clarify, sir, I think the chairman has more precisely outlined the procedural posture, and I would agree with the way he has expressed that.
Okay, again, Sarah, thank you very much for winding your way through a rather complicated record here, and we'll await the draft decision, draft order. Thank you. You're adjourned.